We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We got our man Emmanuel Acho here on the airways, thankfully here. He just started a dialogue, uncomfortable conversations with the black man, former NFL player, former University of Texas Longhorn. And I don't think my man Emmanuel has an ounce of body fat, which makes me completely jealous at my age here. Emmanuel, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us here on Bonte's Tiny and Guru on 95.70 Game. We've been talking about your video here that we've all watched here, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, and me being a black man, Daryl the Guru Johnson being black. We know what you're going through. We know what you're going through when it comes to the text for white people. Just tell us about some of the texts you received and what spurred you to start this video and this dialogue here.
Man, gentlemen, thank you for having me. I think first and foremost, everyone was asking me, like, hey, Acho, what's the move? What are we going to do? And what spurred me to start this dialogue is simply this. Gentlemen, there is a lack of education and exposure amongst races. Let me give you an analogy that will make it clear. I'm first-generation American. My parents were born in Nigeria, and so when they came to the U.S., they didn't have any dogs, no animals. We didn't have any dogs. I didn't grow up with pets, gentlemen. And so as a kid, I got attacked by a dog. So now, 20 years later, whenever I'm in the park with my friends and they go up petting dogs, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, this dog might attack you. And that's because I didn't have any exposure to dogs growing up, so I can't decipher between a dog that's a threat and a dog that is a friendly animal. In the same sense, I draw this parallel. Because white people didn't grow up around black people, they can't decipher between a black man that might be a threat versus a black man. Because white people didn't grow up around black people, they can't decipher between a black man that might be a threat versus a black man that's just black. When black people don't grow up around white people, they can't decipher between a white person that's a racist versus a white person that's just white. And so because of that, I realized, you know what, man? There are so many questions that my white brothers and sisters have that they never get answered, and so they live in ignorance. And they never get them answered because they don't have black friends to ask or they don't feel like they have a safe space. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to invite everybody into my seeming living room and have an uncomfortable conversation with a black man. Because white people have always wondered, man, why do you say white privilege exists? They've wondered, man, why do y'all care more about white on black crime than black on black crime? They've wondered, wait, why can y'all say the N-word, but we can't? They've wondered, why are y'all rioting? Why not just peacefully protest? Rioting does nothing. And I said, you know what? Let me take 9.5 minutes and answer all these questions.
Well, you're probably going to need more than 9.5 minutes, I would think, right? You're going to need 999,000 minutes, I would think. Let me ask you a specific question. All lives matter. I've heard, you know, we have a radio personality in Sacramento near us who's just suspended or gone on administrative leave because he used the term "all lives matter" as a response to DeMarcus Cousins actually tweeting, and I'm going to take him at his word. And I've heard other people say this too. It's like, oh, I didn't know that was really bad. I didn't know all lives matter. You tell me what the problem is with all lives matter.
So inherently, there is no problem, so to speak, with all lives matter because all lives do matter. There is an ignorance with all lives matter. Let me explain. If you all were to walk into your neighborhood and you saw one house was on fire, you wouldn't call the fire department and be like, all the houses are burning down. No, you'd be like, hey, there's a house that's on fire. Can y'all please come help put this fire out? Every October in the NFL, when I was playing in the league, there was Breast Cancer Awareness Month. That's not to say other forms of cancer don't matter. It's to simply raise awareness on this one specific form, because this is the issue we're trying to address. To say black lives matter, it's by no means to undermine other lives, and it's not saying that all lives don't matter. It's just simply saying, hey, right now, black people are dying on camera because of hate crimes and racial inequality. They're dying on camera, mind you, because of racism. And more than anything, several times these white officers are getting gassed. And so when we say Black Lives Matter, it's not to be rude. We're just trying to draw attention to one specific issue. And so I charge and challenge those who are saying all lives matter. We understand that. And we're not saying that's not the case. But that would be as ignorant as seeing a house burning down in a neighborhood and being like, but all these other houses are important too. So that's my thoughts in regards to it. It's not that all lives matter is rude. All lives matter is just ignorant.
Emmanuel, as fascinating as that video was, I just shared with the guys a little earlier that as I was growing up and I heard NWA and their message about the police or Public Enemy or Tupac, you know, they were always in a tone of they were angry and aggressive. And I get it. And I was just sharing with them that that's kind of how I thought you had to get the message across. But in your video, what captivated me was your tone. Did you once at all think, you know what, I'm going to do this video with this tone? Is that just who you are by nature? Is that your personality? Or did you once think, you know what, I might turn the volume up because I appreciate the way you went about it, the fact that you weren't angry for people that aren't black. Like, not that there was an agenda, but he's just talking to us. Man, when did you decide that that's the course of action you were going?
That's a phenomenal awareness that only a black person can truly understand. So remember, I'm first generation American. And so while I'm 6'2", 240 pounds and as black as can be, I don't harbor the same pain and hate in my heart that so many of my black friends do because of hundreds and hundreds of years of oppression and slavery. And so while I fully understand the black struggle because I'm black, I don't harbor the same amount of pain that they do. And so I realize in order to get my white friends to understand this message, I can't deliver the message aggressively because I fully understand my white friends because I grew up with them in that culture. And so I said, okay, black people, I feel you, I am you, I hear you, but they're not going to hear you if you're yelling and screaming. So let me lay aside my pain for a moment and speak in a manner that can be digested. And it's kind of like if you bring food to the table and it got too much spice on it, I'm not going to eat it. It don't matter how hungry I am. So let me take off some of the spice, which is anger. Let me take off some of the herbs, which is pain, and let me just serve this meal that can be digested.
Emmanuel Acho here on 95.7 The Game with Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. Emmanuel, you talk about a culture, right? Back in 2013, you were a member of the Philadelphia Eagles, and you joined a team later on that fall in which that same season, Riley Cooper, one of your former teammates, was denied backstage access at a Kenny Chesney concert in July of that same year, and he said some things that he shouldn't have said. He said the N-word. I want to ask you, Emmanuel, being a teammate of his and being black and seeing, knowing that Riley Cooper's in that locker room, what was that environment like in Philadelphia, knowing that Riley Cooper was letting off racial slurs when he had no business doing it? What was it like in that locker room, in that culture, knowing that Riley Cooper had done that summer?
Man, it was there was a lot of turmoil because, like I said, man, I don't think, bro, this day and age, and it's a shame on us, that I don't think we understand the weight of that word, both black people and white people. I had to go back and look it up and look up really the pain so I could understand, dude. The N-word is synonymous with oppression. It's synonymous with a black person being equated to dirt. It's synonymous with being no greater than a slave. Remember, Frederick Douglass, the black abolitionist, he wrote that when talking about his master, that reading would spoil an N-word. Like, that is how black people were viewed. And so when Riley said that, man, there was so much turmoil because black people have so much pain when you hear that word coming from a white person. Mind you, black people have rephrased that word into a term of endearment. And I know some white people are like, well, if black people can say it, how come I can't say it? Please truthfully listen to and educate yourselves on what that word meant. Like, Remember, the governor of Arkansas, I believe, in the 1960s, he said, white people will not go to school with N-words as long as I'm alive. That was in the 60s, my friend. That was not that long ago. So although we hear it in rap songs and black people have made it culturally appropriate, which amongst black culture it is appropriate, let's not get it twisted. I think white people have to understand when that word comes out of their mouth, it elicits a visceral reminder and reaction of slavery.
Are you more hopeful right now or worried?
I honestly, now I'm hopeful, dude. If I could tell you all the responses that I've gotten off my video, simply like, man, I cried with my wife over this and we shared it with our kids. Man, I never understood black people had to go through this. Thank you for telling me in a manner in which I understand. Man, I'm having discussions with my white friends about this. I just got a text from my friend in France who saw the video. Like, I'm hopeful. And I'm hopeful because all it takes is a bit of dialogue. That's it. Obviously, the looting and the rioting, that stuff is concerning. That stuff is worrisome. But if people would truly take a moment and realize if Emmanuel Acho can have that much of an impact, imagine the impact you can have. And that's so I'm hopeful, dude. I genuinely am.
Can you share with us when you saw your initial reaction when you saw the first time you saw the George Floyd video? And real quick, Emmanuel, have you ever had a bad encounter with the police?
Only really kind of racial profiling incident I had with the police was I lived in an affluent neighborhood, Highland Park, where Matthew Stafford went to high school in Dallas, Texas. So I lived adjacent to that neighborhood. I didn't live there. My teammates lived there. And so after a team dinner in high school, I left the neighborhood, got pulled over for no reason. Cop had no reason to pull me over. He, like, checked for my license, registration, and then just let me go as if I didn't belong in that neighborhood. That was my only real racial profiling incident. And remind me the other question you just asked, my man.
Went through your head when you initially saw for the first time the George Floyd video.
Ah, God. Man.
We could hear it. We could hear it in your voice.
I'll say, I guess that, whatever I just said in the last 10 seconds. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the dude was crying out for his mother, who was dead. And so imagine where he was in a state of his life at that moment, as his life is being taken from him due to a corrupt police officer with a knee on his neck, and he's crying out for his deceased mother. I don't know, man. I was heartbroken, dude.
Yeah, we all are. Yeah.
No, we are. And that's why, Emmanuel, yesterday we had this show, and I thank our boss for giving us the platform to even talk about these issues. I was broken after what I saw last weekend. I know you saw the speech of Killer Mike down in Atlanta, what he had to say. I've listened to all the powerful speeches from black people on the street, on CNN or whatnot. I was broken. But you talk about having some hope here due to your dialogue with white people now. Is it going to – what else is going to need to – is it going to just – do we need the voting? Do we need to – does it start at the top? Like, how – because I'm still trying to – even though I'm hearing everything and watching these videos and I'm watching your video and I appreciate these videos, I'm still having a hard time believing that things are going to be different.
Well, let me tell you, dude, if I was the ultimate legislator, I think it's as simple as this. I would mandate integration, and I don't mean tolerate integration. I mean mandate it if we really want to make a change. Now, keep in mind, bro, and this is going to show you if America has truly come far. Imagine what would happen if we tried to mandate integration. Imagine the backlash. But if we really want to make a change, you have to mandate integration because mandating integration would mandate exposure. And so I think everyone within their domain has to find a way to do that. Whether you're a pastor and you have small groups, whether you're a coach and you have teams, very reminiscent of Remember the Titans, which so many people, I'm sure, listening to the show have seen that movie. Whether you're a CEO of a Fortune 500 company and you're assigning group projects for different individuals, if you really want an action step from me, if I can be honest with you, that's the only action step. Because the only way to fully get knowledge is to fully be exposed. But you can't fully be exposed if you have no exposure. And that is my solution. Now, is that actually practical? Because God only knows the pushback when you try to mandate integration. I don't know. But that is the most logical to me and psychological step.
Do you think, like, to me, I agree with everything you said. And it's why I think sports can be at the forefront of this, because it's not mandated integration, but it's integration. And, you know, I was just telling these guys, I wouldn't be the person I am today had I not, like, played basketball, for example, and been exposed to more different people. So, it sounds like you're saying you recognize the importance of sports in this dialogue.
Yeah, of course. But remember, sports is all but mandated integration. You feel me? Like, you're not going to play football without having some white old linemen, some black receivers, some black DBs.
Oh, okay.
Like, that is mandated integration. You're not going to play basketball without having a cold three-point shooter who in high school who's probably a white dude, without having, like, sports do mandate integration. They just do it naturally.
Right.
And that is the beauty of sports. Is you'll see so many people speaking out on this in the sports world who are like, man, I didn't even realize this existed. Because that's what you do naturally. But the majority of America doesn't necessarily play sports. Specifically, doesn't play it beyond high school. And so that is exactly what I'm preaching and teaching about, which is why I think sports are so vital.
Emmanuel, yesterday on air, I apologized to Colin Kaepernick. And the reason I did is on his journey initially, I didn't think he was putting it all out there. And I was telling him, you know, he ain't talking enough for me. But when it's all said and done, he basically traded in his career on a cause that now is just prevalent. And I thought about him when I saw the George Floyd video, like, this is what he was doing. Can you share with us your thoughts on Cap before and after? Have they changed it all? And, you know, because I just feel kind of guilty that I didn't give him his props for standing up for a cause then. And now look where we're at. Just, you know, everything's on fire because of police brutality.
So here's what I'll say about Cap. I appreciated his heart. I loved his heart because all Cap wanted was to raise awareness for police brutality. Now, Cap made some pivotal mistakes, unfortunately, wearing pig socks. Right? If you give people a reason not to listen to you, I promise they're going to take it. I promise you they will. So when Cap wore those pig socks, people are like, he's disrespecting our police. The national anthem thing, again, if you give people a reason not to listen, they won't. I have no problem with Cap for doing that, but it's primarily because Nate Boyer, a man who served in our Army for decades, I played football with him at Texas, a former Green Beret. Please look him up. Nate is the one who told Colin Kaepernick to take a knee, because Nate said, a man who has fought at war, who has had to bury his own brothers, Nate said that taking a knee would bring more respect to the flag. However, the agenda got moved and said that it was all about a flag. So I respect Kaepernick. I respect the heck out of him as a man, and I respect everything he stood for. Remember, in 2020, it's very hard to assassinate a person, like with MLK. God rest his soul. So you can assassinate his career, which is blatantly obvious. Is Kaepernick the best quarterback in the NFL? Absolutely not. But during the 2017 and 2018 season, is it clear as day that Kaepernick should have been on a roster? Absolutely. I'm a fan of Kaepernick. He did take some missteps, but I love what he stood for.
In 30 seconds, Emmanuel, we thank you for the time. We're up against it, but in a short answer, is it a good thing that sports are not happening right now? Because I'll admit it, even being a black guy, walking around, knowing what people go through, I almost think it's a good thing that sports isn't going on right now, because I've been able to really lock in and educate myself on what's been going on in this country for the last 400 years.
It is a phenomenal thing. Sports has caused America to sit in its sin. Sports has caused America to deal with the stench of its longest air. And so I am thrilled that sports aren't going on, if only that we may solve this issue.
Man, hey, I just want to share with you, Emmanuel, on our text line from the 510. He said, this Acho guy has changed my life from the 925 out here in the East Bay, in the Bay Area. They said, my white ass loves this dude. So your message is getting across to people, and we thank you for sharing that message. If you haven't seen it yet, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, Emmanuel Acho started this dialogue yesterday. You could catch him on ESPN, former NFL player. Emmanuel, we thank you so very much for spending some time and shedding some light on what you're doing here. We thank you so much.
Thanks so much, my friends. Y'all be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.